What up, everybody, and welcome to the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording remote tonight from my office in Dedham, Massachusetts. And joining me, as always, is the CEO of HedgeBetter, Justin Fine. Justin, oh man, where to begin? It's a tough day for all week for all Patriots fans everywhere across the world. What do you say, my man?
You know, it was tough. It felt like, you know, a lot of this season we were kind of living a dream, right? It was like a fantasy, a dream come true. And on Sunday, that dream became a nightmare. And I think we got a rude awakening. It was a harsh reality. You know, I know the general public for the longest time was all over the Seahawks, the analysts, the rest of the country, but we held strong our faith here in New England that the Patriots were going to come through and put up a good game. And I think a lot of us thought they were going to win. And it was a lot uglier, I think, at least in the offensive side of the ball, than we had hoped it would turn out to be.
It was. And look, like I've now been able to experience five Super Bowl. Patriots lost six Super Bowls. I've experienced five of them really in my life. And look, this was the most palatable Super Bowl loss I felt like we've ever had. I mean, it's never easy to lose a Super Bowl, and I don't want to misconvey that I wasn't disappointed, because I was. But at the same time, I walk away from this game and I'm like, look, if the Patriots and the Seahawks played 10 times, I have a hard time convincing myself, based on what I saw Sunday night, that the Patriots would even win one of those 10 games.
I mean, look, it was – the thing, though, is that, like, I feel like what was wrong with the Patriots could be, you know, easily corrected. I just felt like, you know, when the Patriots defense, I think, was every bit as good as the Seattle defense, right? And so I don't know. Like, I look at that game and it obviously didn't go the way we wanted to. But I mean, let's be very clear. I think there were two big problems with the Patriots, and that was the offensive line play, specifically their left tackle, Will Campbell, and the fact that Drake May was definitely hurt, or at least more hurt than a lot of people expected. Outside of that, like, you know, I think the Patriots defense put up a hell of a game.
Well, we got an awesome episode plan. We got so much to talk about with this game. We're going to like get into it all, but I think we're starting at the right place, which is just, you know, look, Justin, how many times over the course of the season did we say on this very podcast that the Patriots were a limited team and they weren't a traditional Super Bowl team, but it was a wide open AFC, right? And so why not the Patriots? We said that like literally like 50 times, right? Yep. So I just think at the end of the day, you know, they got some luck. They developed a quarterback. They got great coaching and the defense became Super Bowl caliber. And that's what got them, I think, in this game in the first place. But at the same time, in no way, shape, or form was this a Super Bowl caliber team in the traditional sense of the world. So they held it together. They won a lot of games. They're a very, very good team. But I think finally they just came across a team that was good enough to exploit some of the deficiencies on this roster that, frankly, we have been talking about since day one of training camp, that especially on this offense that never filled, and their luck kind of ran out. And I just think they were outclassed.
Yeah, they were. I mean, the luck did run out, you know, heading into the third quarter. I mean, this was still a winnable game, right? Like that's the thing and that's the thing that I don't want to lose sight of is, like, you know, we're talking about how poor of a performance it was in regards to certain, you know, facets of the game, you know, the fact that the end result turned out pretty poorly, but let's not forget that like halfway through the third quarter, this was a two score game. It was still a very winnable game. And you know what, the Patriots like did what they could do, I think, to keep themselves in it, but then the dam eventually broke and all those weaknesses.
It was a winnable game, but it should not have been a winnable game. And the real reason it was a winnable game is because, frankly, Sam Darnold was dying to keep the Patriots in this game and really tried to give the Patriots this game on multiple occasions, especially in the first half.
Yeah.
And they didn't take advantage of it. But I mean, look, if Sam Darnold played a good game, this would have been a 38-7 blowout at some point. It was really, that's what kept the Patriots in the game, and credit to the Patriots defense for that too. But I mean, I think yes, in a sense, yes, this was a 1 or 2 score game. This was a winnable game right up until the middle of the fourth quarter, hypothetically. But I think, you know, in another sense, this was a total ass kicking by the Seattle defense.
I mean, make no mistakes about it. The Seattle defense, you know, for as well as we can say the Patriots defense played, the Seattle defense was obviously awesome. You know what I mean? Like they did their job. Like they were every bit what they were hyped up in build to be. They got after the quarterback. They played good coverage. For the struggles that the Patriots had, the Seattle defense exposed them, right? They exposed Will Campbell in his injury. They exposed Drake May in his injury. And they played very well. You got to take your hats off to them.
You do, Justin. And they were able to exploit some of the limitations on this roster. And, you know, Justin, I think this kind of brings me to my next point, which is that, like, in spite of it all, you should feel really great if you're a Patriots fan today about where this franchise is, about this season. They won 17 games. They developed the quarterback. They got a great coach. They developed so many players and filled so many holes. They moved this whole franchise so far forward this season. I mean, when I say that they're not a Super Bowl team in the traditional sense, that doesn't mean they aren't a very good team. And it also, Justin, doesn't mean that that's not achievable this offseason. And I think at the beginning of the season, we thought they were 3 or 4 years away from that.
Yeah.
And now I think that if they play their cards right this offseason, there is no question that they could be a Super Bowl contender next year.
There's no question that they could be a Super Bowl contender next year. What I'm hesitant to say, though, is that, you know, I feel like even if they come into next year a better team, which I expect them to do, right? I think Vrabel is, you know, going to want to add talent. I think the Kraft will add talent and spend money. I'm not really worried about that. I just feel like the pathway, the way the seas kind of parted for them, you know, between just starting even in the regular season with the fact that we saw so many of the usual contenders fall short, didn't even make the playoffs. And then the way the playoffs just kind of fell, you know, you had Josh Allen get eliminated, CJ Stroud play awful, Chargers being beat up, Denver losing their quarterback. Like everything was perfect for the Patriots to get to the Super Bowl this year. And so even though if they're they could be a better team next year, I still think they might have a worse chance of getting to the Super Bowl.
I agree, but I think that where they're positioned right now, this is going to be like a 5-year run where they're going to be right in the thick of this,
sure.
I think, for the next few years, because they have the young quarterback, because they have the coach. And from there, it's plug and play.
Yeah.
And so I think that – do I think they're going to make it to the Super Bowl next year? Probably not. Do I think they're going to be a playoff team next year? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And I think they will win a Super Bowl with this Vrabel May sort of regime at some point in the next 3 to 7 years.
I mean, I will say I'm still pretty confident in that. You know, I do think, especially if they add a little bit more talent to this roster, I'm still not doubting Drake May long term. I know when I'm sure we're going to get into it, but you know, I'm chalking this more so up to him being injured than the moment being too big, or him, you know, not having the skills as far as what it takes to go out there and play at a Super Bowl caliber level. I think the guy really was hurt. You don't just go from being one of the most accurate and high-powered quarterbacks and offenses in the league in the regular season to what we saw happen, you know, over the last few weeks and on Sunday. So I'm chalking it up to injury for May. I feel pretty confident that if he gets healthy and they add more talent around him, that he'll be just fine.
Well, let's get to May since you brought him up, because I think that was going to be the lead story of the podcast today, and that is Drake May. And what I agree with what you said, and what I want to tell Patriots fans about Drake May is do not lose faith in Drake May. Now, look, I have questions about Drake May, and I don't know how you couldn't based on what we saw this postseason. But I said that the last two episodes of the podcast too, if you remember, like I still had questions about him as an elite player, but let's not misrepresent what happened the last 2 weeks with Drake May. Drake May didn't suddenly forget how to throw the football in the course of 2 weeks. Correct. And I feel like what I'm hearing on Boston Sports Radio and in the media the last few days is he was rattled and he had like an emotional meltdown. And that's why all of a sudden he couldn't hit the side of the barn with a ball. And that's ridiculous. Okay. Drake May was injured. Drake May was injured. His Definitely. Shoulder is bad. It's way worse than they let us on. He got an injection. He was on the injury report for a few days. He missed a practice. And he even told you he was hurt today in his postseason press conference. The guy could not throw the ball. It's a 4 to 6 week injury, at least an AC joint separation. He would not have played, I feel like, if it was a regular season game. He took an injection in his shoulder right before the Super Bowl. Do you know why they gave him an injection, Justin, right before the Super Bowl?
I'm assuming he was in an incredible amount of pain. He said his arm was numb playing the game.
Desperation.
Yeah.
Desperation. Yeah. That's why. Because he couldn't do what he was needed to do. He couldn't do what he normally could do. It was not reliable. It was not consistent. So they had to inject him. It's far from ideal. The guy is hurt.
Yeah. No, he was definitely hurt. Look, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's an injury thing. I mean, you know, obviously there's things about his game that he's going to have to tighten up. The turnovers, you know, are obviously still a problem. But look, I think it all comes back. Both injury and his turnovers come back to that offensive line. I mean, the fact that the guy can't, you know, wasn't able to stay upright. He was constantly under pressure, constantly getting sacked, you know, experiencing the physical play of physical defenses all throughout the playoffs. Like, that's a direct reflection on his line, particularly the left side of that line.
Do you think Drake May was rattled on Sunday?
I don't think Drake May was rattled in the sense that the moment was too big. I think Drake May was rattled in the sense that because of his injury, his body was failing him in preventing him from doing what he wanted to be able to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think he was a little flustered. If you want to use the word rattled, fine. But let's not forget why that was.
Right.
And it was because he was A, hurt, and B, under constant, and I mean constant duress. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that is why it gave the appearance that he was a little rattled and flustered. I don't know what Drake May is. I don't know if this guy is going to be a guy that is one of these guys that doesn't perform in big games. Like, I think that's still very much up in the air, but I just don't think we should like understate the significance of how the injury in this particular situation probably was like the major driving force for why he looked just a little kind of off.
Yeah,
emotionally and mentally.
I agree. And one other thing I'll add to that too is, like, you know, if you go back and watch that game, you know, obviously he wasn't lights out to start, but those first couple of possessions, you know, the Patriots they started moving the ball fairly well. He made a couple of throws. The running game looked like it was moving the ball well. Ramondre Stevenson had a couple of good runs. They were going down the field. And every time, and we were talking about this in our group chat, there was a big negative play that brought the drive to a complete standstill. And that negative play was a result of Will Campbell in Jared Wilson. So, you know, like, I don't want to, like, if the Patriots were able to go down on those first couple drives and get some points out of it, even if it wasn't necessarily a touchdown, even if they were just able to get in a field goal range, get some points on the board, it could have wound up being a very difficult game, a different game from how it turned out to be.
It might have, but I think those first couple of drives, and especially I'll point to that first drive, it was a microcosm for the whole game, because it was like they made a few good plays and then they just shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
And every time they did do something right, which was not often, frankly, in the game, they did something wrong and they set themselves. It was like one step forward, two steps back. Will Campbell gives up a sack, you know, negative running play, something like that. And it was like they just couldn't stack anything. I mean, there was a point in this game where six of their seven drives ended on three and outs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's bad.
Very. Yeah. No, look, I agree. I guess my point is just that, you know, I'm bringing it back to the whole offensive line in the sense that, you know, even with a hurt May, whatever they were doing in the beginning, it's not, I didn't feel like they were getting stifled. I didn't feel like they were overmatched in the first couple drives. I just felt like they were doing something stupid, like drive killing plays, negative plays that wound up, you know, totally stifling them. And what I think eventually led to the dam breaking later on in the game.
So what is your concern level for Drake May going into 2026?
I mean, I think that's contingent on what they do on the offensive line. Like, to be completely honest, because like, I think this is a guy that I don't think it's a fluke. I think he's one of the most talented passers in the NFL. He's shown like the deep ball, like the accuracy. He can make throws in this league that very few people can. He showed his athleticism, that he can be mobile. He can take over a game on the ground with his legs and make big plays, right? And he's shown that at times that he could be resilient in fight through adversity. So, like, I don't worry about any of those things. I just worry about, you know, his weapons and his protection.
I worry about what he's going to be like in big games. And I worry about what he's going to be like in the postseason. So if you ask me what my concern level is for Drake May, I'm not concerned September, October, November. You know, I'm a little concerned about December and January. I think he has something to prove, especially after this postseason. And like I said, I am the champion proponent of the fact that the guy was hurt. And I think that certainly these last 2 weeks, that was a big part of what we saw. But even in the context of the injury and even before he was injured, you know, I don't know. I feel like we didn't really look all that great, you know, at times in January and in some of the other big games they've had this year. So great player. Thrilled we have him. Still believe in him. Still believe he has the potential to be a franchise quarterback. But yeah, I think there's going to be some questions hanging over him going into next year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get why you say that. I do think, though, the context is important. I think the Chargers, you know, in his first ever playoff start, you know, against the Chargers, that was a good defense. It was cold. He still went out and threw for 300 yards, only one of two quarterbacks to do that in the year. And then after that, he played in two blizzards. And I think in the second one, he got seriously injured. So, like, I do give him a little bit of grace in that sense, because I think his playoff run was marred by bad weather and injuries at the end.
Yeah. Okay. All fair. But do you think it's going to be like a self-fulfilling prophecy? Like, we talked last week about how one of the things that doesn't get said enough is Brady caught a huge break early in his career, winning that first Super Bowl. It kind of took away that stigma that you see a lot of quarterbacks have to get that over that hump. Oh, they're a loser. They can't win the big game. Well, fair or unfair, and you're right, it might well be unfair, but the reality is that's going to be the narrative around Drake May going into next season. Can he win the big game? Because he did so poorly in the postseason, even though he was hurt, the offensive line sucked. I think the receivers on this team stink. I think they got worse as the year went on. All those are like super fair, valid points. The defenses were terrible, but the reality is this is going to hang over him a little, I think, going into next year. So whether it's fair or not, I think the pressure kind of amps up a little on him now more than probably really deserves to, just because it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
The pressure does amp up, but I would say, you know, and I hope this is how Drake's viewing it, because, you know, he strikes me as somebody who, or at least we thought, you know, he's had the intangibles, right?
Yes.
And so if I'm him, I'm able to separate. First off, it's not like he lost first round of the playoffs. He made, you know, his first postseason run, he makes it to a Super Bowl. And then I think hopefully he'll be able to separate the fact that, hey, he didn't just show up and like crap his pants and lay a goose egg. Like, you know, he was hurt. He was hurt. And I think hopefully he'll be able to separate the two things. Like, yes, I didn't play well. Yes, we lost the Super Bowl, but I didn't get a chance to go out there and prove what I can really do, because I was severely limited by my injury and my physical status. So I hope he's able to make that mental distinction in his own head.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be a real, I think it's now going to be, it's probably the first real, like, true curveball of his career. Yeah. I think where, like, you know, now this is going to become a thing where he's going to get a lot of these questions, especially in the postseason next year. I think things will be hunky dory for the most part. I mean, the kid's a terrific quarterback. He's going to make plays. I'm sure they're going to beef up this offense around him. But going into the postseason next year, there's going to be a lot of questions on him. And, you know, the one thing, and we can end it on this before we move on to some other stuff, is that let's not forget that Peyton Manning was a loser for 8 years. I said that on last week's podcast. I think it needs to be said. You know, this kid is a damn good quarterback. And let's not, as Patriots fans, let's not raise the bar so high that only a Super Bowl victory every year is the standard. Because even Brady didn't meet that standard throughout his career. You know, he got off to a fast start. But, like, there are a lot of great quarterbacks in this league. And we could name them. Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen just turned the ball over four times in the postseason that have come up short in the postseason, right? Yeah. So, like, let's just enjoy this. Let's just appreciate the fact that this kid is our franchise quarterback and that, you know, he might not exercise his demons next year or even the year after or even the year after that, you know, but that doesn't mean he's not a great player.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. I think he's a talented young kid. Yeah, emphasis on young. And I think this was a good learning experience for him. And again, part of it is on him. Part of it is on this team to make sure that they address some of those problems heading into next year with his weapons and his offensive line. And, you know, then the rest will be on his shoulders, right? But it's a two-way street, I think, when it comes to fixing what's wrong.
It is. And you can't understate, at the end of the day, the fact that what he accomplished with a C-/D+ offensive roster around him this season.
Yep.
And you know, and this is not a good team on offense. If you think this is, Drake May made this team look like a good team all year long until they got against some really good competition and defenses in the postseason. But that was all Drake May. There is still major, major holes on this roster. And let's segue into that because, I mean, the biggest problem and the biggest thing I'm worried about, and the guy that I am worried about, I'm not super worried about on this team, is Will Campbell.
Yeah.
And I think everyone in Patriots Nation is worried about Will Campbell. This was one of the worst performances in the history of postseason offensive line play. He had the worst performance on Sunday night per Next Generation Stats of any offensive lineman in any game in the NFL this year.
Yes.
14 pressures.
Yep.
The worst game of any lineman on the biggest stage in the NFL. I don't know, Justin. I'm super concerned about Will Campbell. I know he was hurt too, but I think he was shaky all season long, not just the last couple of weeks. And I think that's the difference with May. And I'm going to tell you something. The narrative I keep hearing all week long, oh, we should move him to guard. Oh, we should move him to guard. Well, first of all, we're able to debunk that today. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm 0% convinced that Will Campbell can even play guard in the NFL based on what I saw this season.
Yeah, against good defenses and good defenders, the guy struggled. And as much, you know, and here's the thing. Obviously, his injury is tough, right? Because, you know, if the Patriots weren't in the playoffs, you know, that would probably have been a season-ending injury for anybody else, right? The level of the MCL sprain that he suffered. And he probably even came back a lot quicker than anyone would have thought he could have or should have. So, you know, the injury, you can't discount that injury, right? That's obviously tough when your left tackle is playing on a sprained MCL. But with that being said, he did show signs of weakness before he got hurt, right? I mean, again, one of his worst games of the year was against Myles Garrett. He didn't play that well against the Falcons. Teams with good pass rushers exposed
him. TJ Watt, Max Crosby.
Yes, they all kind of exposed him a little bit. So I definitely am concerned. You know, it's funny because they talk about his arm length, but to me, it's not even really his arm length. It's more so his physical build, because when I look at the guy, like, he doesn't look like you see some left tackles in this league and they're true monsters. True monsters. Yes. You know what I mean? And Will Campbell just doesn't have the body type of what I think a prototypical left tackle has. It's more than just his arm length.
It is more than just his arm length. I couldn't agree more. And it's more than just his pass blocking. That's the thing. Like, I didn't feel like he was exceptional run blocking either. And I mean, you hit the nail on the head, because this guy struggled throughout the season, even before he got hurt. And I just think, what Myles Garrett did to him, what TJ Watt did to him, Atlanta's got a few good defensive ends. They gave him a hard time. I never felt like he really settled into that role of left tackle strongly. And I'm not totally closing the door, and Coach Vrabel isn't either, on the fact that he might be the left tackle of the future for this franchise. But what I would say is this. When you draft a guy at number four, Do you, are you buying a developmental prospect?
No,
that he's going to take, no, that's going to take 3 years to grow into the role. Absolutely not. And the reality is, like, I go back to that draft and we recorded the week. I like Ty Warren from, who was an all rookie tight end. The tackle the Jets took 3 picks later made the all rookie team. Yeah. The other all rookie tackle was Calvin Banks, who gave up 4 sacks this year and something like 1,100 snaps, by the way, or whatever it was, and 17 games, played 17 games for the Saints. Those guys were plug and play starters that were drafted after him. When you draft this kid at 4 and you've got this kind of questions around him going into year 2, that's a bad draft pick.
It is. It's a very bad draft pick. I mean, the thing is, it's obviously difficult right now to close the book on Will Campbell and say definitively that he's not going to make it as a good tackle. But to your point, the first left tackle off the board is typically like a Pro Bowl caliber, ready on day one, like you said, guy who can come in and contribute. I think he's got a lot of work to be done. And not only physically, you know, does he have challenges that I think he needs to overcome? Because like we said, his physical stature is not a prototypical, you know, all pro left tackle, but his technique too. I heard a lot of criticisms about his technique. And I think when you're somebody who's undersized like he is, and you're playing through injury like he is, you need to be technically as sound and proficient as possible. That needs to be airtight. You cannot afford to be making mistakes in that area.
Well, exactly. And again, I just say this again, but again, you took this guy in the top 5 of the draft.
Yeah.
So like, yes, could he figure out his technique next year and turn himself into a good tackle? I would not close the book on that one bit, but I'm sorry. If you're looking for a developmental prospect, there's plenty of those guys in rounds 3 through 7, you know, and the reality is there were good starters at tackle that were on the board when the Patriots picked and they passed on them. And I think that can be said. And I would also say, one of the biggest questions on this roster going into next year, who's going to be Drake May's number one target? Who's going to be the difference maker, right?
Yeah.
How great would it be if Tyler Warren was on this roster as a tight end? You know, they need a young tight end. They need a pass catcher. You could have rolled with Vidarian Lowe in that left tackle spot, and I don't think it would have been any worse.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, look, you took Kyle Williams, I think, what, 3rd round, right? And it's not looking, I mean, you know, look, he still may be a good player, but he didn't pan out to be like, you know, a star-studded rookie like some guys are. Travion Henderson, who you took, you know, in the 2nd round, like, we really didn't see much at all of him in the later half of the season and throughout the playoffs. And, you know, maybe part of that was the offensive line, but it's like the Patriots definitely do need some help. They need some weapons. They do need to protect Drake May. And yeah, there would have been a lot of people sitting there at 4, or even if you traded down, you know, into the middle of the first round and got some additional draft capital and then picked that you could have got, that you could have got with that. But I agree. I don't think there was any real difference between him and Vidarian Lowe. But if you think about what you just said, that's concerning because Vidarian Lowe is not a starting tackle in the NFL.
He's a
fringe starter at best. And we're saying it's a real conversation whether him and your number 4 overall pick would have, you know, who would have been the better option. So,
but when Velo was in there, did you feel like they lost anything? I didn't.
No. I think they played really well during that stretch when Lowe was in there.
Exactly. I mean, honestly, like if you want to talk about like how this team competes with Seattle or a team like Seattle in a game like that, and I take it right back to that draft and I say, if you draft Calvin Banks with that pick and you have a stable starting all rookie team, good top 12 tackle on that roster, that's really what they needed in that game. I think the die was kind of cast. The pick of Will Campbell and his failure to really fit into that left tackle role, it made them vulnerable all season long, and they finally found a team in Seattle that absolutely crushed that vulnerability in such a profound way. And the die was cast. I mean, it really was. It was not a good draft pick. It was not.
It certainly is not.
Maybe a good player. I'm not saying he's not going to be a good player, but it was not a good draft pick at number 4.
No. And the last thing I'll say about that too is, you know, it's one thing to go out and play as poorly as you did. And, you know, I know in a loss like that, you know, you like to say, oh, it was the team. You can't pin it on one single guy. You know, it's a team effort. It's a team sport. I'm sorry. I think in that game, you can directly pin that on Will Campbell. Like you said, like if you had a decent left tackle out there, that could have been a completely different game. It could have played out totally different, especially with how good that defense played. And for him to go out and have that bad of a performance and then storm off and not face the media and not face the music, like I thought that was just like such an immature thing to do. I know you're disappointed. Like, I know you're upset. I know you're angry with yourself, but like nobody did that to you but you. You had a bad performance. You should go out there and you should answer to the media just like everybody else does.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of see that one both ways, but
I wouldn't want to talk to the media. I get it, but I'm just saying, I mean,
he got tooled on, Justin. He did. Like, it wasn't just that they lost, and he said he literally got completely outclassed, like as bad as we've ever. He got pantsed on the biggest stage.
He did.
I almost get it. The fact,
but he should have walked up to that podium at the end and he should have said, look, I'm hurt. I had an awful game. That loss is on me. And I'm going to do everything I can to in my power to come back and be the best version of myself and help us win a Super Bowl next year. I think back to when he got drafted, you know, he was standing there all emotional, crying, saying, you know, I'll do whatever. I'll die to protect my quarterback. Like, I want to see that version of Will Campbell after that loss. I want to see him.
Well, he did that today, though. I don't know if you saw it.
I didn't see it today, but you know,
he did that today.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
and did you see Vrabel's comments today? Any chance about Will Campbell? And just basically saying, Will Campbell's our left tackle next year.
No
ifs, buts, he's going to get better.
No, yeah. Well, that doesn't shock me because Vrabel doesn't strike me as the type of guy who would give up on a young kid like that right away, right? So I'm not shocked by that.
Yeah, I don't love that because I'm like, look, I don't know. Like my feeling is, what have you seen from this guy in his rookie year? To me, I don't want them to go into next year. I with Will Campbell as the only starting caliber left tackle on this team. Like they, in my opinion, finding another tackle needs to be like priority number one. Like, do not trust this kid with that position next year. I'm telling you, the very future of your franchise quarterback, who, by the way, has gotten the stuffing beat out of him the last two seasons. You know what I mean? Really, he has. And you really need to stabilize that O-line. I do not love the idea of them just like blindly putting their eggs in Will Campbell's basket going into next season, because I didn't see anything that makes me think that's going to work out this year. And if it doesn't work out, that could really, really affect Drake May's health and development.
Well, not only that, I mean, look, I think it's very obvious the issue with Will Campbell and the risk that that's posing. But as good as he played this year, Morgan Moses is going to be like 37 years old.
They got lucky with him.
They got super lucky.
He didn't really get hurt.
I'm shocked that he stayed healthy. I'm shocked that he played as good as he did. He was awesome. But going into next year, as far as I'm concerned, you have two liabilities at tackle because you got a guy who, you know, as far as I'm concerned, at 37 years old playing tackle, you know, one snap away from his career being over. And then you have another guy who you don't even know if he's a viable tackle. So they need to address the tackle position one way or another, just to have another guy that can rotate on either side.
I mean, the Morgan Moses thing was like a free agent grand slam. When you really think about what they paid for him and what he was, the consistency he put to that right tackle position, but you can't count on a guy that age, you know, to fill that position on a year-to-year basis. That's really what it is. So, you know, I'll say this, we're going to talk about next season at the end, but let me just preview that by saying, like, fixing the tackle position is priority number one over anything else on this roster.
I agree.
Whatever cap room they have, they have to be aggressive and bring in a pro caliber or two pro caliber tackles on this roster.
Agreed.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the coaching and Vrabel and McDaniels. I don't know what your thoughts are on the coaching. I felt like they were very conservative.
Super.
I felt like they were playing to try and get Darnold to give them a turnover.
Yep.
and then capitalize on the turnover, and the turnover never played. Look, I'm not saying I enjoyed watching that. I'm not saying I loved it, but I think now that we know how hurt Drake May probably was, I totally get what they were doing on offense, even though it sucked. I don't feel like I put a ton of blame. There's a few things you can point on, I'm sure, on Vrabel or McDaniels for this loss. I really think this was more about personnel.
I mean, I agree. Look, you know, my initial reaction watching the game was, you know, you have Josh McDaniels coaching in his 10th Super Bowl. He's had 2 weeks to prepare, and this is what we're getting out of our offense. But look, what's the guy supposed to do? He's got a quarterback whose arm is ready to fall off. He's got a left side of his line, left side of a line that you know, couldn't block the wind at this point. What can McDaniels really do?
Right.
You know,
there was nothing.
He was,
there
was nothing.
They had nothing in the tool and ammunition. No answers. There were no answers. I really think that with this defense. And look, I mean, your quarterback couldn't even hit like a basic 10-yard throw consistently the last two games. So I'm not blaming May for that, because I think he was hurt.
Yes.
But I can't put that on the coach's doorstep either.
Right. Exactly. So look, and when your defense was playing as good as it was, I understand them saying, hey, we're not going to beat ourselves with turnovers in mistakes. We're super limited on offense. We're going to try to rely on our defense. I mean, let's not forget too, like the first play of the game from scrimmage, Sam Darnold was an inch away from throwing a pick six to Marcus Jones.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That, you know, like I can.
Oh, Darnold tried to give them one. I mean, he Darnold did not play well in this game. We're going to get to him in a second, but Darnold, those plays were there to be made.
Yes. So I don't, exactly. So I don't blame Vrabel for saying, hey, look, our defense is playing well. Darnold has a history of falling apart in big moments. We're super limited on offense in terms of our quarterback and his protection. We got to be conservative. I don't hate the game plan. They were super limited.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did what they had to do.
Yes.
I really think that the way they approached this game, they gave themselves the best chance to win based on the circumstances. And, you know, when I say, look, if these two teams play 10 times, I have a hard time convincing myself that the Patriots win one of those 10 based on May's injury status and what we saw from Campbell and everything. But I will say, if there was a path to victory for the Patriots, it was going to involve a big defensive play in the first half of this game. Yep. And they were really close, I think, a couple times to getting it. But I think that's what Vrabel was banking on. And it just never came, really more because of bad luck than anything else.
Agreed. Yeah, totally.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about this wide receiver group. You know, you had kind of said a few weeks ago, you know, how happy you were with them. And I think that I'm thinking your opinion probably changed over the course of the postseason. But I just thought this receiver group, they got worse as the season went on. And, I mean, Stephon Diggs, great player, had a few moments this year. Softest 1,000 yards I can ever remember in an NFL from an NFL wide receiver. And I thought he really slowed down as the season went on, to the point where a part of me is almost wondering if maybe he should have waited until like mid-October to come back, because he really was not the same player in the postseason or coming down the stretch.
No, he wasn't. I mean, and I think to me the most shocking part was probably, you know, when we saw him start to heat up, you know, towards the middle of the season, the way he did starting in that Buffalo game and carrying, you know, through the middle and into the second half of the year. I thought this guy, by the time the playoffs came, was going to be prime Stephon Diggs, like old school Stephon Diggs. Yeah. He was trending in a great direction, right? He looked quick. Yeah. He looked energetic. Yeah. He was making catches. Like, I think about some of those catches he had, right? Like, it just all fell apart for him. Now, how much of that was reliant or you know, fell in the fact that, you know, at the end, the weather was bad, the quarterback wasn't playing well, and the offensive line didn't hold up. I'm sure that's kind of like a trickle-down effect, but he did disappear in the playoffs. I mean, he really didn't do anything in Denver. He didn't do anything in the Super Bowl. And it was a shame, because he's the closest thing you had to a number one receiver.
Yeah, he regressed. He regressed. Yeah. And I think a lot of it had to do with his injury. I really do. I just think, like, that was a big injury, ACL injury, coming off that injury. None of us thought the guy was going to play. I mean, he played 21 games. Stephon Diggs played all 21 games. I don't think he missed one game with injury this season. And when you think of his age and the major injury he had, you know, it just does it surprise anyone that, I mean, he kind of was just like, I felt like almost like he was out there. He made a couple nice catches here and there coming down the stretch against Houston, most in particular, but like he was not a consistent, reliable guy that was getting open. And I thought, you know, one of the things I thought about the game on Sunday was that the Patriots' lack of having anyone that could beat man-to-man coverage as a receiver or tight end was really one of the things that allowed Seattle to blitz the way they did. And, you know, like you got no one that can beat man coverage. That empowers that defense to just come after May. And they did that. And I thought that was a huge problem.
Yeah, it was a huge problem. I mean, you could argue, right? As much as I don't think that McDaniels is the major reason why they lost, like, I think he maybe could have done a little bit more because, you know, like utilizing Travion Henderson and some slip screens and things like that. Like, I don't know. I think you could have drawn up some more plays to get the ball into the twitchier guys like Pop Douglas and Stephon Diggs' hands in short yardage situations, trying to let them make a play with their feet. Like, I think they could have done a little bit more in that regard.
Possibly. I mean, I look on that last garbage time drive, that little, maybe it was the last play of the game, that little slip pass to Travion Henderson that, you know, obviously it kind of worked in garbage time, but stuff like that, you wonder if maybe they should have done more of that stuff. Yeah. All right, let's talk about the one bright spot, if you want to call it that, in this game for the Pats, and that's the defense.
Yeah.
Right? This is a championship caliber defense right now. And I think that they played really great on Sunday night. Yes, they gave up some rushing yards to Kenneth Walker. It's hard to defend the run when your offense can't get a first down.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys got tired. I thought Walker had some terrific runs. There was a couple times they had him stopped. He's a great player, and he snuck outside on them. And I thought the Robert Spillane injury was a factor in this game. And I don't think I've heard anyone mention that, but I think that a healthy Robert Spillane, probably some of those big running plays don't happen if Spillane has a good ankle. But overall, you have to be happy with what you saw from this defense.
The defense, like you said, was the bright spot. I mean, Christian Gonzalez, give that guy his money. Do you know what I mean?
Like
I'm totally, but I know we both had some reservations about Gonzalez coming into this year, his physicality, his ability to withstand injury and be durable. His toughness, like all that stuff. He totally proved that he's worth every bit of hype. He all but shut down JSN. He saved a couple of touchdowns with his defense. Like we talked last week what the move was going to be. How do you keep someone like JSN kind of at bay? And we talked about, do you double team him with Jones or do you try to have Christian Gonzalez blanket him? For the most part, Christian Gonzalez blanketed him. Like he was fantastic. And that defense in general, I mean, look, you went into the third quarter of the Super Bowl only giving up field goals. You hadn't let a touchdown up through three and a half quarters. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
That should be enough to win.
The game wasn't 38-0 is because this defense was so damn good and held them to field goals in spite of the fact that, I mean, look, football is the ultimate team sport. And it's hard to play defense when you get nothing from your offense. I'm sorry. It's the you know what I mean? Like the time of possession, the field position, the turnovers, they did as well as they could.
If you had told me, if I hadn't been watching the game and you had updated me in the third quarter and said, Patriots haven't given up a touchdown, but they're down two scores, I would have looked at you like you had three heads and said, what? Yeah. They haven't given up a touchdown and they're down two scores. Right. Make it make sense. You know what I mean? So that was just a total, you know, lopsided affair where the defense came to play and the offense didn't hold up their end of the bargain.
Yeah. There's no question of that. And I really feel good about where this defense is going into next year. And I'm sure they'll make some additions. If you look, they're not really going to lose many critical pieces going into this year. They have to sign Gonzalez. You just said that, and I agree a thousand, but that has to be a priority. This sign this kid.
Yeah.
He's the real deal. My doubts are gone. And the other thing I'll say is when I look at their draft this year, I think Craig Woodson was their best draft pick this year.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fantastic. Kid. Yeah. I mean, the kid, you know, he was quiet in the first half of the year, right? But sometimes I think when you're a rookie playing in a secondary, when we're not talking, when we're not speaking your name that much, it's actually a good thing, because it means you're not doing too much wrong. He was really solid all year, got better as the year went on, had some big plays throughout the playoffs, and I think they hit a home run with that. And again, it's another thing that, you know, you look back and you talk about, well, you got rid of Jabril Peppers and Kyle Duggar, and I was pretty iffy about that, but you know, when you got a kid like that, you know, it makes some of those decisions, you know, worthwhile.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he stepped into that role, and you know, I think one of the best things you can say about a safety is when you're not calling his name.
Right.
Because if you're calling his name all the time, that usually means it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
And short of that first pass of the year against Geno Smith, of all people, and the Raiders, I mean, you really didn't see Woodson get torched much.
No, he was very solid. The secondary in general for the Patriots, especially in the playoffs in the back half of the year, was extremely solid. The secondary was one of the best secondaries in the league. Obviously, the front seven dealt with a little bit of injuries from time to time. I totally agree with you. Robert Spillane is one of the best run-stopping linebackers in the NFL. His injury, you know, towards the end of the year that was on and off was obviously a big factor. But look, you got a great tandem between Barmore and Milton Williams, a young tandem, a great young tandem. Your secondary is young and they're fantastic. You got a former first round pick in Kalyvon Chaisson who kind of revived his career, had the best season of his life. You know, you got some guys who can make plays. Like you said, that defense is going to be fine. Imagine, you know, bringing in a guy like Max Crosby, to help come off the edge, right? Like he could take that defense over the top. So I feel really good. And I will say this too, you know, just looking as far as like, in my opinion, what's tougher to build, a championship caliber defense or a championship caliber offense, I would kind of, I know it's tough to hit on a quarterback, but I would say it's tougher to build a championship caliber defense because, as we've seen, the coach and the quarterback is 70% of the equation towards having a championship caliber offense, right? It's not easy to put together a defense like this Patriots team did. And
what I would say to that is that you can roll out there with Drake May and you can surround him with average players and you're still going to be pretty good. Now, one of the problems with this team is that they were below average in a couple of spots, and that ultimately killed them when they faced good defenses and good competition, and certainly in the Super Bowl, particularly on the offensive line.
Yep.
But you don't – when you, I mean, we've seen it with Josh Allen, with Lamar Jackson, with a lot of these franchise guys. When you have one of these guys, and I think Drake May has a chance to be one of these guys, you don't need to have – you know, a super team on the offense. So I think that is an advantage the Patriots are going to have.
Yes, I totally agree. So, you know what? Look, there's a lot of holes that they need to plug in this roster, particularly in the offensive side of the ball. But I think they got a good defense that if they can stay healthy, you know, they're going to keep them in a lot of games and help them win a lot of games next year.
100%. All right, let's talk a little bit about Seattle before we wrap it up, because we got to go to the other sideline. A couple takes I have on the Seahawks. Number one, I'm getting the medicine bottle ready, Justin, for you. Are you going to take a dose of medicine on Sam Darnold yet? Or are you still resisting?
I can't, Dennis. I can't, because Sam Darnold did just as much in that game to try to lose it and keep the Patriots in. I think arguably more. He did more to try to lose the game than he did to actually win the game. Like, I get it. He didn't have some of those big turnovers. He was inches away from a couple of big turnovers, but he did what I thought he was going to do. And that was come out and have a very underwhelming performance. Like, you can't say that the Seahawks won because of Sam Darnold. They won in spite of Sam Darnold.
They won in spite of Sam Darnold. You're right. And Sam Darnold, his performance was maybe slightly better than Drake Mays. And it was really just a couple lucky bounces that kept him from having the two or three turnovers.
Yes.
That's the reality. But I think Sam Darnold is a good quarterback. I mean, I'm sorry. If a guy wins back-to-back 14-game seasons and then wins a Super Bowl, I have to say he's at least a good quarterback. He had a trash game on Sunday night. I fully admit that. Give some credit to the Patriots defense for that too, because they're a really good defense and they made him look bad. But I just can't undermine what I'm not going to do that to him. I think he deserves a ton of credit for the way he redeemed his career. And hey, Sam Darnold went from seeing ghosts to exercising demons last Sunday night. And did he play a good game? No, but he's a good quarterback. He had a good season, and I'm not going to trash him anymore.
Listen, I think you're right to say that he's not a bad quarterback. He's definitely not as bad as what we saw in the Jets or in Carolina. It obviously, you know, you go out and you win a Super Bowl, you have to at least be a decent quarterback to do that. I will say, though, he goes up with in like, you know, he's in the category with like the Trent Dilfers and some of the others that just like, you know, the least talented quarterbacks to win a Super Bowl, in my opinion.
Maybe somewhere in the middle. He's not an elite franchise guy.
He's not.
I will 10,000% say that. But I think this kind of proves too, you don't necessarily need that Superman quarterback to win if you build a good team around him. And you know, Darnold, look, I think Darnold winning the Super Bowl, a lot of teams and a lot of fan bases should be encouraged, because it just shows you don't need to draft Pat Mahomes to win a Super Bowl championship. You know, Jalen Hurts last year, same thing, right? I mean, you can now say it about like the last two Super Bowl champions, like good quarterbacks, not great quarterbacks with great teams and great defenses around them, still is a winning formula in this league.
Yeah. Well, and you look, the last thing I'll say is, you know, people want to talk about the Patriots schedule and that's fine, but I think there are a lot of other teams from the AFC that would have, you know, just given the fact that how banged up the Patriots were and how tough of a time they had. I think a healthy Patriots team, if Campbell and Drake May were fully healthy, I think they would have beat the Seahawks. And I think there are a couple of teams out of the AFC that would have also beat the Seahawks. So I think the Seahawks have the schedule to thank just as much as the Patriots do, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but you could flip that in reverse too. And if Bo Nix doesn't break his ankle, I don't think the Patriots beat Denver.
Probably not, but I think that Denver team with Bo Nix beat Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been a good matchup for sure. Yep. You know, that 100%, that would have been a great Super Bowl. And then one quick last thing about the Seahawks, and then we're going to move to, well, two quick things. One, the coach, give him credit. Great coach, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a nut, but those guys sometimes are super successful coaches. So, you know, he's going to be the hot commodity now. I feel like once a coach wins a Super Bowl, they're kind of a made guy. Like, they're getting a second job no matter what happens from this point on. You know, he's a made guy. And then Ken Walker, terrific running back, right? Like, let's give some credit. This is the age of the devalued running back. I thought he made a big difference. There were a lot of times where I felt like the Patriots had these plays stopped, and he was able to find something and had some pretty big runs. I thought that was difference-making running back play at a time where we don't see a lot of that in the NFL.
Yeah, look, Ken Walker played great. It feels like he's been in the league forever, but he's only 25 years old.
Right, 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah, yeah. So he came in the league young. He played a really good game. He obviously had to pick up a big increased workload when his running mate Charbonnet went out for the rest of the playoffs. So you know what? Look, he was the difference maker. He kept that Seattle offense moving because – you know, they weren't having a ton of luck through the air. Patriots secondary was playing really well. Kenneth Walker was really kind of the jump start that got the Seattle offense moving.
Yeah, he was. And like I said, there were many times where he was able to find yards where I didn't think there was anything. And that, I thought that was a real difference in the game. I mean, when we did our Super Bowl pick, one of the things we said was if either team can run the ball, they're going to sail to victory. And even though we were wrong with the score, I mean, that was one thing we were right about, was the fact that, you know, Seattle being able to consistently run the ball, it was tough. And no one's run the ball in the Patriots that well all season long.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, look, you know, you do got to give him credit. He's a good running back. And actually, speaking of running backs, just while we're on it, we're on the topic, I got to give – if there's just something I'm willing to take medicine on.
Yes. You've come a long way.
It's Ramondre Stevenson, because you know what? Yes. Look, I'm not saying he won't have problems next year or the year after, but I was fully expecting him to collapse this year. I didn't think his success was going to carry through the playoffs. Ramondre Stevenson, for as awful as of a first quarter of the season that he had, he turned it on. He was great the rest of the season. He was reliable. And I don't think he fumbled again after that.
He might have, but he didn't. The big one never came that we were both worried about. A lot of people worried about, understandably so. He might have been the only player on this offense, him and Mac Hollins, that I could say he actually had good games on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Between if outside of your quarterback, between Ramondre Stevenson and Travion Henderson, that's probably the only position group I feel comfortable with in the offense going into to next year.
A little bit, but I would say Stevenson's getting old. I mean, I don't know. Henderson's, something's got to develop with that guy. He doesn't seem to see the field well or something. I mean,
I don't know what
it is. We didn't really talk much about him, but he's become a frustrating player. Certainly has that home run hitting potential, but, you know, not consistent. And he does a lot of negative, takes a lot of losses on running plays, which is a terrible thing.
Yeah, hopefully he can figure it out, because we obviously saw the talent in college. We saw the talent in the preseason. We saw flashes throughout the year of his athleticism and playmaking ability. What was preventing him from getting more run at the end of the year, I don't know. I thought after that Tampa Bay game, he was kind of going to turn the corner and become a staple feature of this offense for the rest of the year. That obviously never happened. So I'd be curious to find out if there was a reason for that. But hopefully the guy finds a way to get on the field more, because he's got the ability. He just needs to play consistently.
He's like one of these baseball sluggers that hits like 40 home runs, but also bats like 220.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and you'd like to see him just be a little more consistent. I wouldn't give up on that though, because I do remember Shane Vereen, James White, it took them a year or two before they really caught up to the speed of the game too.
Yep.
All right, let's take a quick look ahead to next year, Justin, before we wrap it up. We're going to have all offseason to break down the offseason. We're going to record. We record a little less during the offseason, obviously, but we're definitely going to be recording monthly or so, all the big calendar landmarks, free agency draft, you know, a couple other times throughout it. But look, a couple things I want to say about the offseason. Number one is their free agent list is really good. Like, I don't know if you've looked at their free agent class this year, but they're really not losing anyone of value. Kyrie's Tonga, Chaseon is on there, Jalen Hawkins, Austin Hooper. There's not one player on that list that if they lose, I'm like, oh man, that's a huge blow.
No, I agree. And I think if I had to guess, I mean, I would imagine Hawkins, Chaseon, and Tonga come back, right? I don't think they're going to be market, you know, breaking deals. I would imagine at least two of them wind up coming back. And if not, like you said, none of them are guys that you can't replace. So hopefully we see them back. But yeah, overall, the team, I mean, look, when you bring in as many new guys as they did, right? Yeah. You're kind of still at the starting line. Like you're not going to be up to lose a bunch of guys right away, because you just brought them all in pretty much in the last year.
Yeah, I agreed. And you know, like they have a ton of cap room too.
Right.
So they really should be able to add on. Now they got to sign Gonzalez, but they should be able to sign Gonzalez and still make a couple big signings in free agency.
Yes. Yes.
My next take going into the offseason is I already said it once. The priority has to be the offensive line. Okay. Has to be. I'm getting Drew Bledsoe vibes from what I've seen happen to Drake May the last two seasons. Okay. Guy that's had some early success, showed some flashes, and got the shit kicked out of him in his first couple of years. Okay. Bledsoe's career was shortened by the beating he took. And you were a little young for that, but I watched it in his first few seasons and he lost a lot. Okay, from like year seven to year two to year seven, year eight. Okay, he got so badly just walloped so badly. Yeah. It really affected him. And I'm getting those vibes with May. So I feel like this is a critical year. Like it's year three. We have to stabilize. Patriots have to stabilize this offensive line situation. Can't let this franchise quarterback get destroyed.
They do. I mean, look, Jared Wilson is rightfully a center. I think whenever Bradbury winds up shipping out of town, you know, Bradbury's a little older. I think Wilson will eventually move back to the center position. So you do got to bring in some help in the offensive line. Obviously, we talked about Morgan Moses. You know, he was on borrowed time this year. You can't really count on him in the long run. And then Will Campbell, look, I'm sorry. I know you don't want to give up on him. I know, you know, Vrabel is going to, you know, tell Campbell he's got all the confidence in the world in him. But look, if you ask me to weigh the priority between Campbell's ego and Drake May's health in well-being, I'm taking Drake May 11 out of 10 times. So whatever they have to do to make sure that May is well-protected in healthy, which again, he didn't twist an ankle. He got hit, right? That's how he got injured. So you got to do whatever you got to do.
I'm not giving up on Will Campbell, and I know you aren't either, but I'm not trusting him in 2026.
No.
And it makes me concerned to hear what I heard from Vrabel today, because it sounds like Vrabel is going to trust him. And I just wonder where this was Vrabel's first draft pick in New England, and he stuck his neck out for this guy. It sounds like Vrabel's super emotionally invested in this, and that might not be a good thing.
Well, look, I know it's two different cases, but just look at what happened with Ramondre Stevenson this year. We talked about him, you know, we said we wanted him benched. We wanted him cut. We didn't want him to see another snap in the field. And Vrabel showed that he had the loyalty and the confidence to let the guy work through his problems. Yep, and
that's true. That's fair.
Right. So I think Vrabel, but by the same token, Vrabel to me, I think is a smart enough guy that if that issue continued with Ramondre, he would not have been the lead back coming down the stretch. Right. So I have to have enough faith in Vrabel that he will back his guys. He is a player's coach. He will show them that he's confident. He will give them a chance to fight through and fix their mistakes and right their wrongs. But if there is not an improvement, I don't put it past him to have a short leash and make a necessary change.
I hope so, Justin, because I would hate to find themselves in a situation like week 9 or 10 next year where it's obvious Will Campbell can't play tackle and there's no other answer on this roster. So they really need to go out and sign a backup plan or draft a backup plan.
Yeah.
Someone that can come in if Campbell just completely falls apart. And like I said earlier, I'm not convinced he can play guard either. I wouldn't trust him either one. I mean, I'm not giving up. I just wouldn't trust him.
Yeah.
And then the last very quick take I'll give you, then we're going to wrap this up, is I know everyone seems to think the schedule is like the worst schedule ever, but I know it's a harder schedule. It's not that bad. Like, no. There's no reason that they can't be a playoff team next year.
I totally agree. I mean, look, yeah, they got a couple more tough games on the schedule next year compared to this year. That's not that hard to beat. This year set the bar pretty low, right? But I thought the same thing when I saw their schedule for next year. I said, this is a typical Patriots schedule. This is not like a schedule of death, right? Like, so the schedule, look, maybe they don't go 13-3, 14, whatever it is next year, but I still expect them to be a 10-12 win team and to make the playoffs.
Yep. I agree 100%. I think they'll be an 11-ish win team. They may not win the division. That will come down to those division games, of course. And there's a lot left. Like, who's going to add who? I mean, it's obviously early, but I think people are overreacting to the schedule. All right, Justin, anything else you want to add before we wrap up this post-Super Bowl? We should be at a parade. We could be at a parade. Not should be. We could be at a parade today.
I was banking on this, man. I said in the last episode, I said, look, I needed to redeem myself. I never went to the other ones. This was going to be my big chance to get there. But TBD, to be determined for a future date. I know it's tough, but
if anything, this just reminds us, and we should know this in New England, but because we've lost a lot of these games and we've won a lot of them, but we've lost a lot of them. It's not easy to win a championship.
No.
And I think that this is going to, I think it's going to make us as fans hungry. I think it's going to make the team hungry.
Yeah,
and I really do. And I think that's going to be a good thing for the long term, the fact that they are going to go into next year with some questions. Were they fool's gold? I don't think they were fool's gold. I think they're a good team. Maybe not a great team, but a good team. There's going to be a lot of questions, a lot of things said this offseason about them based on the Super Bowl and this postseason. And it should keep them hungry. And I think that is a silver lining to the cloud.
It is. I mean, look, when we started the season, I think we all said it would be a huge victory just for them to be playing meaningful football at the end of the year. If they were able to make the playoffs, that would be fantastic. And here we are sitting and talking about them having a chance to win a Super Bowl. You know, they made it all the way. Ultimately, they fell short. But like we've said time and time again, they accomplished so much more this year than I think any of us thought they would. So they're ahead of schedule, and that's the big silver lining. They're ahead of schedule. They certainly have their coach. We think they have their franchise quarterback. It looks like they got a Super Bowl caliber defense. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, a lot of positives you can come away with at the end of this year.
Absolutely. All right, let's wrap it up. Any final thoughts, my man?
No, just, you know, another season in the books. I feel like it just started now that it's over. You know what I mean? It's, yeah. Now we're in the doldrums of the sports worlds. I mean, we don't really got much going on. You got basketball, and hockey.
Olympics. Yeah. Olympics is okay. But, you know, like I love the Bruins. So, you know, this is the time of year where you want to start getting into hockey, and I'm going to try my hardest to get into Olympic hockey. I enjoyed the four seasons last year, four seasons tournament. So I'm hoping that I can get into the Olympics, because the Bruins don't play again, I think, till February 25th, which just sounds like it sucks.
Yeah, exactly. So Bruins and Celtics, Red Sox coming up in a few months. So, you know, we'll get by, but another long off season awaits, and then be very curious to see what they do the rest of 2026 and where this team is to start the next year.
Absolutely, Justin. Well, listen, we want to thank all the people that listen to the podcast, everyone that likes and follows us on Facebook. We got some growth remaining to do with this podcast, but our audience did double this season, which is a good thing. So please continue to like and follow our content. And we will catch you in a couple of weeks. I'm sure we'll record sometime around free agency, which is only like 3 weeks away at this point, which is going to be interesting. So thank you, everyone. Have a great February. Enjoy the Olympics. Stay healthy, well, and safe. And we will catch you in a few weeks. Be good, and go Patriots.